Love a rugby league same game multi? Then you've got to check out Picklebet same game multi. Watch your odds and payouts skyrocket when you combine your favorite team's markets like head-to-head, first try scorer, and winning margin. Picklebet, the next-gen betting app and official sponsor of the NRL All-Stars podcast.
What are you really gambling with?
For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
And all that glitters is gold.
Only shooting stars break the mold.
Welcome to another episode of the NRL All-Stars podcast. Barnsley here for the first TLT episode of the 2024 season. Did a mini TLT for the first two games with Luke Garrity a week ago, but this is going to be a proper, fully fledged one. So for a proper TLT episode, have to get Billy Marion back on board. Billy, you were on the first preseason podcast back in January doing your Parramatta Eels. It's been a little bit of time in between drinks, but we're back. You got here for the TLT for round one, and we've had a couple of games of footy. How awesome.
Got to bring in the guns for the big ones, mate. I'm excited, mate. I always enjoy doing the Eels wrap with you, although we haven't had much turnover for the last few years, so I feel like it's the same sort of bloke we talk about. Brad's building a team. Top eight, here we come. See, a bit of a soft draw, so a little bit of excitement on the horizon, mate. Can't wait to talk to the footy.
Yeah, you should be excited with your draw. I'm not really with mine, but we got a good win with the Roosters.
Was.
Look, we should start off just by saying this is going to be a bit of a different TLT podcast because we've got a couple of different things happening on it. So a bit of a bigger one, actually, for people. We're going to talk about just the couple of games that were briefly, just our general thoughts on the round one games. We're going to do a Storm team preview as well because the Storm were the odd team out. So I do apologise to all the listeners. I just ended up with too many single team episodes and the season crept up on me. Like I said before, I was expecting the 1 week later start, and because of the split round, it kind of caught me. So we're going to do a quick Storm mini preview, going through their players and options as well. And then we're going to do a TLT, going through the interesting changes and people that were named and not named, guys' value that's been boosted or reduced, and the remaining C and VC options. So, cracker of a podcast. The other caveat before we get into last week's game, Billy, is I feel awful. I hope you didn't catch COVID from the Supercoach launch or something. There was a lot of people in that room. But, so my voice starts going, everyone. It's because I've got a bit of a cold and sore throat at the moment, and that's why. But, Billy, take this off me. How did you find the two games in Vegas and round one launching and the Supercoach scores and everything else? How'd it go for you?
Well, I was out with the kids, so I had the first game on mute. I was going to watch the replay, and then someone shouted the score at me. So that was a lot of fun. But, it was enjoyable. I only had a couple of players in there. Pierre Kira going down. Obviously, I'd say a high percentage of people owned him and kind of played him, so it wasn't too much of a concern. But I was really disappointed about not getting a chance to see how the big fella would perform with all the raps he'd given. But the two games are really solid. I think there was a general consensus that it was some good footy. I think the guys were really well behaved for promoting a sport out there, which was pretty good. So, all around, some good footy, a couple of good games, a couple of players coming out of the woodwork, and yeah, can't wait to see what happens this week, mate.
Yeah, same. It was two terrific games of football, and for Supercoach, I mean, I think it was there was some disappointments, but it was not really the stars, which I think was a big thing. I mean, I think the only star that disappointed was Ezra Mann with 21, but I tell you what, like we said it all preseason, I think everybody did really, like a lot of the content creators. Well, he's getting too highly owned at that price point and for what his production is, and it's just that troublesome 5'8 spot. But all the other stars, like when you're looking at it, like Latrell killed it with 110.
Yeah, he did.
Joey Martin, 106. Garrick, 99. Olakwadu, 97. Teddy resurgence. He got 70, but he looked even better than that. Reece Walsh killed it at 81. Turbo got the same 81. Like the stars really stepped up. It was really, I guess, those mid-rangers and those 50-50 decisions that really hurt. So you mentioned Pecura, but I mean, the other thing too is that both Roosters' edges got injured. So Wong and Satili both picked up injuries. and Satili only got the 25 in limited minutes. Neither of them played as many minutes as they should have. And then you had guys like these front rowers that sort of you were taking a punt on. Like, I was pretty keen on Tatala, and in the end, I think they said that the rotations got stuffed up a little bit, but he didn't get enough minutes, and he threw up a 37, which was super disappointing. And then you had the same thing happen really with Kepi on 41, where he started the game on fire. And I think he was at like 30-something on his first stint. And then his second stint, he put up 7 points or something. So Arrow was a stinker too. And the
stage right.
I have to say to you too, the coaches did some real weird, funky stuff. And they had some excuses where they said there was injuries and whatever. But like Jai Arrow, for instance, he played 20 minutes and then didn't play again on the edge. And they ended up putting Cam Murray on an edge. And then they put Host on the edge off the bench. There was some weird stuff that happened as well.
Did Amaro get a good full game, or did he come off at any point? Because I know he seemed to be injured at one point pretty early in the game. If you go back 3 or 4 years, I would have said, Arrow, at that kind of price point, you've got to get him in. But the minutes and his role in the last couple of years on top of the injury here and there was enough to scare me off. I just couldn't do it. So I ended up going Cotter instead, just for the middle minute consistency. But yeah, he kind of did what I hoped he wouldn't do the last couple of years yesterday. Sorry, on Saturday.
Well, it kind of was okay because he did go off early. I think he was only off for sort of 10 minutes, so he wasn't off for too long. But he went off with an ankle injury very early in the game, so that hindered him as well. Him coming back on in the middle is pretty good for his numbers, especially if he gets that 10 minutes back. I just think the surprising thing was that Murray went to an edge, so Murray could play bigger minutes, and then Host went to the edge when Host came off the bench. So it's just kind of weird that Jai Arrow only got 20 minutes on the edge. I mean, the Roosters kind of did similar. I even think that, like, May had a great – I wasn't a believer in May, but he got massive minutes. Whether those minutes are going to be there next week is a question on whether Spencer Lenu gets suspended and also what JWH's minutes are going to look like. But he played big minutes, but people have to also look at the fact, aside from the outside, he was sitting on an edge for a while, Billy. Like, I swear I saw May defending on an edge for a while too.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I was trying to play catch-up watching the game. But the one thing that I did notice, like, we were talking about this for about 30 seconds before the podcast started, because your Chooks rotation is so unknown and so insane with so many forwards and second rowers, I didn't bother doing any homework on them whatsoever. But he's scores and minutes, his scores off 30, 40 minutes end of last season were very SC friendly. So even if he only goes back to getting 35, 40 minutes, I'd be very happy to get him in my team at that price point, even as early as next week.
Yeah, see, I'll stick by what I said in the offseason because I don't change. You know, I'm not going to go back on my word. Like, at 35 minutes, I've got no interest in Terrell May. At 430,000. Like, I just don't have any. He's just...
Oh, 430. I thought he was about 330.
Nah, he's 430. And that was my argument pretty much the whole preseason. Like, and I actually said, look, I don't like it, but I'd rather get Spencer only because he's only 330. You know, at 330, you can just take a bit of a gamble in the extra minutes. But at 430, I couldn't. But, you know, look, he got huge minutes. And a lot of it was due to the injuries and the rotations being out. But if he goes up to 45 minutes, then, you know, he's a great buy. And I was wrong about his minutes in the preseason. But
when does he normally come on? Is it at the 25 mark or a bit later in that first half?
Yeah, pretty much late. It's around then in the first half.
Okay.
I mean, last year was more like 15 and 18 minutes with the split, something like that, between the halves. And it's sort of projected for that. But
reason I ask is someone forwarded me a video today. I'm sure it's done the rounds of all the podcasts as I talk about it. But there was a small 20-second excerpt of Robinson talking about May in the post-game press conference, saying he loves his game, he loves the little offload, he's really seriously thinking about trying to get him a full 40 minutes in the second half. So if there's any truth to that, I'd be add that to the 10 minutes in the first half. That's a close to a 50-minute spell.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one. Yeah, he did. He did say it was hard to take him off because he was playing well, and that was on the weekend. But he also had said that he wants Spencer Lenu playing an extra 10 to 15 minutes, and that didn't happen either. But then after the game, he said that the rotations were all over the place. I mean, Nat Butcher is a good example, you know. Nat Butcher, I thought, was going to be the 80-minute edge, and it didn't happen. He was named on the bench. And then when you look at the bench, you can say, oh, well, Butcher's going to play in the middle a lot. And Butcher ended up on both edges. And I will tell everybody, you know, there was no way the plan was that Nat Butcher was going to be a left and right edge player for 50 minutes in that game. He was going to play in the middle, but both Satili and Wong ended up injured at different times.
narrow field, mate. You can take two steps to the left, two steps to the right. You cover half the field.
Well, I got to say, like, I'm happy to say that I'm wrong on May from the preseason, but I need to see their full rotation first to get to that. He may very well be a good buy next week anyway, though, because if Spencer Leenu gets suspended, he's going to be a great buy because the Roosters all of a sudden will be a 3-4, a front row rotation instead of four, and that's going to work out quite nicely. But we still don't know, and that's the annoying thing, like when you have these games that are completely stuffed up. And the Broncos are the same. I won't just talk about the Roosters. Like the Broncos, they lose Pierre Cura in the fourth minute. So you've got no idea what their rotations are. Like Carrigan went to the edge as well. So the minutes are all out of whack when that happens.
Yeah. Was there anyone that was underwhelming in those first couple of games, you thought? Or was it generally most players came out with the aggression, the preseason, you know, ready to rock?
I actually thought it was a real credit to all four teams at how good they all were. Like I thought everybody was ready to go. I thought everybody was very good, and even the guys that didn't score great. Like, not that Luke Keary's a great super coach option, but he only scored 43. But I thought he looked really good. Like, he ran the ball really well. And, you know, so I don't think there was many that actually looked underwhelming. I will say that the South front rowers would probably be, you know, underwhelming and the Roosters back rowers. But as we said, that was all fairly injury and minute affected. So really, I would probably say the only one that was super disappointing score-wise was going to be Mam, and he really didn't really seem to be hugely in the game. And like I think we agreed on, but certainly on the Broncos podcast with Wilfred in the preseason, you know, Mam was always going to play third string to Walsh, who had his hand on the ball a lot and had a great game, and also Reynolds. And we saw that, and that's why he scored a 21.
Yeah, similar to Brooks. Like I had him preseason for a few weeks, and I thought, oh, at his price point, he'll do a lot better this year. And I ended up sort of sacking him at the last minute. I'm kind of glad I did. But looking at his game, like he's obviously playing second fiddle to Cherry a lot, which is great. So he doesn't get anywhere near as much ball as he did last year. So I think you can kind of say goodbye to those consistent kind of 50s. But then you go and look at, you know, narrow field. It's only game one, for Christ's sake. Give the bloke a bit of time. That little dummy straight through the line, 30 points. I mean, what's going to happen when he has a short ball to Trbojevic and has a couple of assists? Like, he's going to have he's going to go back to a probably, you know, 20-25s, but all of a sudden he's going to have those quick, punchy, add 20. I feel he's going to, once he gets through this difficult part of the draw, he might kind of open up a bit. So he's probably one to watch coming into the bye rounds.
Well, look, that's the games that were. I'm really surprised that all the players really stepped up the way that they did. Because I was wondering whether it was going to be a bit more dour or whether guys are going to be a bit underdone. You know, they're flying over there and everything. And you've also got the smaller field and everything. There's just a lot of factors there. And I just thought it was fantastic by all four teams. So well done. And I thought the NRL did a great job with it over there as well. It was a great spectacle. Look, I thought it was fantastic to watch. But let's move along. So before we do get stuck into the Storm preview, we do need to talk about Picklebet, great partner of the All Stars podcast. And look, for round one of the NRL, they've got some amazing odds and some markets that I'm all over. Jump on to picklebet.com.au, create an account today. When you do, there's a spot that says affiliate code. Put All Stars in there, and that way they know you're one of our listeners when you sign up, and they'll take great care of you. But all the markets are up for this weekend's games. And Newcastle, $1.38 to beat Canberra, absolutely love. It's obviously low odds, but you can take the handicap there and you'll be fine. But the one that I'm really, really, really loving is that you can get Greg Marju for $9.50 for first try. To compare that, Sportsbet have him at $7. That is amazing value to get $9.50 for Greg Marju first try against the Canberra Raiders playing at Newcastle. You can get him anytime as well for around $1.70. So, but that first try, you will not find maybe any bookmaker in Australia that'll give you $9.50 for first try for Greg Marju. So that's a fantastic one. But I mean, they've got great odds for everything out there. And certainly the other one is the Parramatta Eels at $1.42. I know that the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs are a new look side and everything, but there's a Combank Stadium. You can get a -7.5 line at the moment for $1.89. Looks pretty juicy to me. And there's some great multis as well. A lot of people like the same game multis. Picklebet have them going as well. Certainly, you might not find all the markets up just yet for all of the games, but you'll find in the next day or two, you'll get all the markets up for all of them, including the Sunday game, so you can jump on there. But jump on picklebet.com, have a look, sign up with an account. All Stars is your affiliate code and away you go. So absolutely love them. Great partner of the All Stars podcast and a fantastic bookie to go and check out yourself if you like to have a punt. But as always, make sure you gamble responsibly. Think, is this a bet that you really want to place? For gambling help, you can go to gamblinghelponline.org.au or call 1-800-858-858. Now on we go with the Storm preview. We missed out on the preview with them. We're still going to get in, and I will say to everyone, we still haven't had the full round one start yet, okay? So we're still a week leading in. Let's go through the players because they've always got some popular players. One of the big things with the Storm, though, is the draw that they've got is not ideal for me. So, Billy, when you're having a look at this draw, how do you feel? Because for me, like when I go through it, Penrith to start with is obviously a tough one. Then they've got the Warriors. Both of those are at home, though. So one of the good things is that they do have a lot at home. They've got Newcastle in Newcastle, which is hard. And then the worst part of their draw early is that they've got a bye in round four. So, I mean, particularly when you're looking at guys like Harry Grant at hooker, you have to have a good second hooker because you're going to, like, really... It's one thing to start a low point-scoring position in round one or something, but most people rectify it by a month in. So if, in round four, if you're starting someone that's going to throw up 30 points, it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
And that's going to be what you're going to need to do at hooker with Harry Grant because you don't want to spend on a second one. So I really hate the first month because Penrith's hard, New Zealand's decent, and Newcastle in Newcastle is going to be tough, and then they've got a bye. After that, they come out and have the Broncos. Now, admittedly, four of the first five games are going to be in Melbourne, which is great, but it really, even then after the Broncos, round six, it opens up in their fifth game for them where they play the Bulldogs, but then they hit the Roosters and the Rabbits. You know, it's just not a good early draw for them. So I found myself actually staying away from the Melbourne players, partly because of the draw.
Yeah, I do the same kind of thing. Had Pappy in my season all preseason and then just saw how quick Trbojevic was and just figured, you know what, get rid of the unknowns, just get the big fella in. You're right, too. So the only thing I'll add on that is, apart from the Panthers being the first game, historically, you go back and say, oh, it's only the Warriors. It's potentially a big scoring game. But we talk about this every year. The Warriors had a pretty decent run the last few years playing Melbourne in Melbourne. They beat them, I think, two or three times. So that's obviously historically difficult game there. And then the Newcastle are no pushovers themselves. Newcastle in Newcastle, everyone knows that, you know, the Steel City are hard to beat, particularly on Sunday. We talked about that one before, and then there's that bye. So, yeah, tough draw. I think the only one that kind of interested me there was the obvious one, Grant, purely because of how difficult it is to find, you know, another hooker. Do you go the cheap options and pray a little bit and spread it around, or you go the Marshall King option? So I ended up sticking. Grant was the only one that really kind of stood out to me there, and obviously the cheapie that's just come up in TLT, but we'll talk about him later.
Yeah, and look, we'll talk about Grant first. Let's chat about the few guns, because they do have a few guns to talk about in the Storm, and Grant's at the top of the list. He averaged 73 points for the season. Now, in saying that, there was 5 points off 2022 at 78. It was more in line with the 2 years before, where he went 71 and 74. But 73 points is really good. He's far and away the best hooker. And I still found it a bit underwhelming owning him last year. He certainly busted out for some big ones, but he probably had more mediocre ones than he did the year before. And you can see that in the numbers. Like in 2022, 70% of the time he was getting a 60+, which is pretty solid. When you go to 2023, it's only 59% of the time. And that drop-off of going 60+ is quite big. And then when you have a look at the scoring, he had a real big ton, 149 against Para. But at the start of the season, he also threw up a 44 and a 31 in his first 2 months. He averaged it out with some other, with two tons in the first 2 months as well. But he just seemed to have more 30s and 40s in him than what we're used to with Harry Grant. And look, his base was still solid at 45. He still had the creativity with 15 for his assists and line breaks per game in Supercoach points. But it seemed a little bit off. And he certainly was 5 points off the year before. And then when you look at the fact that you're going to be paying, you know, 750K for him, it's a pretty expensive proposition. The problem is that he's the only top-tier proposition. He's probably the only top-two-tiers proposition. There isn't really anyone close to Harry Grant. So it has become a bit of a discussion in the preseason and even still now with the TLT out that, you know, do you go Harry Grant or do you try and go cheap and use that money elsewhere?
Yeah, I would highly recommend going cheap and using that money elsewhere if you can, and you can get a really good dynamic or skeleton in your team. The drawback is you're going to get him in your team at some point. He's obviously not going to be – he's not going to drop 200K. Maybe he might drop 100 if he goes on one of those little kind of lulls. It's just even if he only scores 50 points a game for a couple of weeks, it's going to be 20 points higher than those cheaper blokes, like if you're playing like Lusick or if you – So your only real options are going with JMK and running that risk of is he injury free and not going to have a bench hooker come on, and he's also got a buy. I think the premium for him the week after Grant, I think it is. So you get a buy out of him anyway, or you go the Egan route or Little route. So and then Little's just coming back from injury as well. So apart from the obvious stats that you just threw out, I think he's one of the healthiest options. So there's some stability you need to think of as well. And that was one of the main drivers for me. So consistency, save a trade, and knowing he's actually going to stay healthy.
Yeah, see, I had him initially and then I ended up steering away from him and I'm not going to have him now just because you can only – like you can't have too many guys at 750K plus, right? You can only afford a few of them. So it's very hard and you've got to leave some out. And I decided to leave out Harry Grant. And I will say too, like if you've got – say Hands and Harry Grant for the same amount of output in cash, you could have like Little and JMK. Like it's the same amount of money. And certainly when JMK is out, you can have Little and hopefully pretty big minutes. Or you could even go for an Appy Coruscant. And then even though he's out round one, you've actually spent on that second hooker that's going to be a starter and you're pretty comfortable round one to go that route. So I think that just because of the money, you can find two guys that you can alternate between that are going to be okay and cover the buys. Whereas even if Grant's really good, when he does have his buy, you're stuffed. But devil advocate the other way around, Billy, on, you know, you're bigger on Harry Grant than I probably am to start with him. He's got the round 4 buy. He's also got a round 13 buy and he's going to have Origin. And what we always see with these type of players is if you don't have them at the start and you don't have much of a plan, you kind of get to round 7 or 8 and then other things happen, injuries happen, and then you go, oh, look, I'll target a game, you know, a couple of months in. And then you go, well, hang on, he's only going to be around for 2 weeks and then he's going to have Origin and a bye. I can't get him now. And that middle period's always tricky because they got around 19 by 2 and Origin in between. So he's going to miss like 3 out of 5 or 6 games or something like that in the middle of the season. So inadvertently, you end up going, oh, well, I'll run home with Harry Grant from round 20. And that's when you run yourself into trouble, isn't it? You don't get these premium guys until way too late and it costs you a lot of points in a position.
Yeah, exactly. And although guys like that are going to be rested from time to time after those sorts of games, it's not always the case. The other thing is I don't like the idea of holding on to one of those Eels hookers the entire season, but I've actually got one of those guys at the moment. So they play all three of the buys. So between Grant and between Lusick or Hands and Grant, apart from that round 4 buy, even you've got that round 4 buy covered. You play Grant every game of the year and you play Lusick every one of those buys and you don't miss a game at all. Worst case scenario, you're gonna get what, 35, maybe 45 points off Lusick, but three of those games around bye rounds where you're playing bums anyway, pretty much. So it's 35, 45 points to save a trade. Happy just to leave them both there for the entire season.
Yeah, I dare say during Origin, you'll miss another one in there as well, where you have to play a Lusick as well for one or two with the Origin camps and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely an option. I'm going to steer away from Harry Grant. I couldn't tell people not to get him though. But I don't think that he's someone that you have to get in. I do think that you could go really well getting two other hooker options. The problem is that it's going to be guesswork, and I think that that's the biggest thing. You run yourself a lot of risk.
Yeah, plus the injury cover.
And the injury cover too. Look, moving along, Cameron Munster. He's another guy who had a down year, but his down year was actually really significant. In 2022, Cameron Munster averaged 81 points, and last year he only averaged 71, sorry. So 10-point drop-off from 81 to 71 is pretty big. And he's also turning 30 years of age at the end of this season. So he is getting to a point where he's still in his prime. He's getting a bit older, and it has been a case of, you know, the last 4 years, he's had quite a few niggling injuries around, which is a bit of a concern. That type of drop-off, you know, it's basically two trains of thought when you're looking at it. A lot of people might say that could be up to 10 points of value there, and for a troublesome position like the 5'8 spot in Supercoach, that could be really good. And it's hard to argue with that sort of thinking because Munster's a gun. But the other thought is that, and I tend to do this with, you know, my eye test watching him, I didn't like the look of him last year. Like, there was all the talk last preseason about how he's given up the drink, he's the best shape ever, blah, blah, blah. And I thought he looked quite poor last year at times, you know, even defensively missing tackles and things. I didn't think he was very good. And if he carries that form into this year, it's going to be a bad buy. And there's going to be multiple 5'8s that could be better than him. Certainly Dylan Brown looks a lot better. So, I mean, look, Billy, Kevin Munster going to come in at 728,000, probably 50, 60, 70K less than what he does the couple seasons before. But I'm just not convinced that he's going to get things back up again to be in the 80s.
Yeah, with Munster, I like to see kind of form. that draws, obviously, the turn-off. The fact that Pappy's only just coming back from injury, I kind of like to see the team gel a bit more. That forward pack, particularly the edges, they kind of change a fair bit. So I would just like to see the Storm get a bit of momentum and see him healthy and running strong before I get him in at that price. And the other one was, there are so many other options available at 5'8 early that you don't need to kind of spend that money on him. You can spend it on any one of those cheapies coming through, or just spend the money on Brown, who has that soft as hell draw. And if you go and have a look at all these games last year that versus, you know, teams that basically weren't in the top six, the average just gets right up there. So happy just to get him in at that price point and just let him play his running game.
Yeah, I'm on Brown instead of Munster. I will say Munster was pretty elite in going 70-plus. Like, 11 of his 19 games, he went 70-plus, which is awesome. Like, that is really good. But one of the issues with him, he has had some massive games in the past, but he doesn't tend to have them often. And his biggest game last year was 124 points. But the two major factors that steered me away from him and being value is that I cannot pick when he's going to be good. Now, maybe that's good for a hard draw. But, like, you had games against the Dragons at the end of the year where you thought, that's great, and he only scored 28 points in 80 minutes. And he seemed to throw up more of those low scores than what he normally does. He also had a 35-point showing against the Dolphins as well, and they're games that you expect him to go, you know, quite well in. So he just seemed to have some of those low ones where normally he had a bit more of a consistent floor at that 50-plus, but he did have a really high amount of 70-pluses, so... If someone wanted to go pod Munster, I think that's the biggest positive with Munster is that he's very lowly owned, probably the lowest owned in Cameron Munster's Supercoach career. So if somebody wanted to go against the crowd of Dylan Brown, yeah, Munster's definitely the pod option. And maybe if he starts well, you can get the, you know, the jump on a lot of coaches there.
Yeah, the other thing is too, lots of people have Lane in their team. Now that that cheapie's been named on the left edge for the Storm, if you're really concerned about that 5'8 position, you could just sort of cover yourself a little bit and just downgrade Lane to the Storm edge, and then use that cash available to really upgrade your 5'8 to Dylan Brown. So worst case scenario, if you know Lane goes on a bit of a tear, start scoring points, it's going to be Brown give it to him because he sits right next to him and you get a keeper in that position anyway. So it's a couple of ways to kind of change around the cash.
Yeah. There's ways that you know Munster in the team that might work out. So I don't want to write him off and I don't want to sound like it's not an option. I particularly don't like it when guys drop off in like their base attack and stuff. It's sort of part of their game. And yeah, that dropped off about 15%. In his base attack year on year for a couple of years there. And his creativity, so his line break assists and try assists, that dropped off by a lot. It went from 21 in 2022 to 16 points per game in 2023. And I think a lot of that was him not having his hands on the ball enough and other guys making plays. And I really didn't like that coming into this year because we've got Ryan Pappenhausen, who we're going to talk about soon. And you'd think that he's going to command more ball than what Meany did once he hits his straps. If Munster already had his clutch attack stats going down last year, as well as his base attack stats going down, then I sort of think that might even be worse this year, considering the Pappenhausen is there. Hughes, I'm not going to go into him. This is a bit of a mini Storm preview. He ended up going 71 last year, which I think was better than what I predicted. I thought he was going to go down from his 69 in 2022. But at halfback, I've said all along, Billy, for me, it's Hines, Cleary in that order. And then if you want to get cute with it and not get a Cleary, then for me, it's Moses. And I don't think there's many other options. Are you pretty much the same? You just, Hughes is good. He's just not as good as the other options.
Oh, 100%. Like I've basically had Hines and Cleary the entire time until I realised I couldn't build a team as nice as I liked it, so I downgraded to Moses. But trying to spread the cash even further, I was reluctant to go any further. But if you would, he'd be the only person.
Yeah, and Moses has a much better draw than what Hughes does, so it really cancels him out quite a bit. But a bit of a weird one is that Meaney has had to move position, so it's hard to really get a gauge on him being an okay buy or not. I really liked him last year and started with him. He had 68 points per game. And now, as we've seen, he's been named in the centres because we've got Pappenhausen back. So obviously the 68 points per game was as a goal-kicking fullback. He now might not have either, although it looks like Pappenhausen may not be kicking. But, I mean, if Papp takes the kicking off him, or at least eventually does, and he's not fullback, I don't like him at centre. But he did show a knack last year and in previous years to be able to perform well, whatever position the Storm put him in. And he was really consistent too. I like that he wasn't missing games. Like 22, 22, 22 threes in a row. That's really consistent. I love Nick Meaney. I would have liked to have got him in draft, but I missed out. He's another one of these high-priced centre wings, Billy. He comes in under 700K. I think if we knew that he was goal-kicking and he had a good draw, he might actually be a smoky for the early rounds if you wanted to spend in a spot in your centre wing. But he just doesn't have either of those things going for him this year.
Yeah, without the confirmation, you couldn't really do it. If you wanted to take a risk on a pod, yeah. But is there really any much upside points wise against his price with that draw? No, so you can't really do it. But I don't think he'll score as big as last year at centre. But I certainly think he'll be a Lomax type player that doesn't get as much ball. But when he does, and kicking goals, he'll be sitting on, you know, 5-6 points 20 minutes into the game. All of a sudden, gets up to the 35. I think he has that sort of incremental bump quarter by quarter.
Yeah, and the other downside for him too is that, like, I would normally be saying, oh, look, if Pappenhausen goes down, I shouldn't say when, I don't want to wish bad luck on the young man, but if he goes down, normally Meaney would go to fullback and he'd take up the goal kicking, whereas now you got Farlongo, who's basically earmarked to be that fullback spot and might even, you know, share time with Pappenhausen at fullback at times, so there's that wrinkle in it as well. Look, the other gun for them I actually really like, and I would like to have him in my side and even thought about it, and that is Elisa Katoa. He scored 64 points per game in 2023 in a real breakout year. He was phenomenal. But the big thing that I like about him coming into this season, he's obviously going to cost money. He's 656,000. He's not one of these mid-range guys, but he's also not super expensive in the 700s. So, I mean, I think that a team could afford to do it if they like the draw or they like what they saw. But the biggest thing for me, Billy, is that last year he got injured a couple of times, and it meant that he had an 11-minute game where he scored 12 points. He had a 53-minute game where he got hurt, where he scored 90 points still, but a 38-minute game where he only scored 20, another 53-minute game, another 32-minute game for 33 points. He had half a dozen injury-affected games where he couldn't play 80 minutes, and that's really good for his averages. And when you have a look at that, really, he could be a guy that's pushing 70-plus as a second-row forward rather than his 64-point price point. And he's a guy that can be a keeper. He had a 40 raw base, 55 floor with the base attack. And he really struck up a nice combination with Hughes. And if you have a look at those last five games, even though he played lower minutes in a few of them, he actually scored 5 tries in his last 5 appearances. And only one of them he didn't score in, and it was one that he played 32 minutes in. It also included a double against the Dragons in round 25, where he scored 127 points. He just seemed to have a really good floor and a really good knack to find some attacking stats. And I just think that he's going to keep getting better for the Storm. Obviously a hard draw to start with, though, and that's a bit of a turnoff.
Yeah, the first 6 games last year, they seemed to go looking for him a bit, or either that or he was calling it, and he was hitting that line really, really hard. I think he scored a couple of tries pretty early. Then he just seemed to go on a bit of a lull. Like, he wasn't these weren't injury games. He just seemed to go missing on the field a bit. I remember thinking, where the bloody hell is he? Like, between him and Arrow, just infuriated me. But then you sort of see him pop up, and he almost break through a line, but he'd be tackle busting and just almost getting through, but not getting through. So I think he's got a lot of touch attack potential in him. I think if he sort of stays healthy, he'll increase the output on he'll increase the output on last year. I think just at that price point, though, there's just way too many guys around that sort of 450 mark, which make it a bit difficult to start with him. But I think he's all these other half-price guys are basically your last year, at least your Katoas.
Yeah, that's right. You might find some of them there. I mean, I will say, like, after round five against the Broncos, he does become a bit of a pod play because he's got the Bulldogs, the Roosters, Souths and Gold Coast. You know, some of those edges he could certainly go well against. So he's going to be a big watch for me.
Do you see, quick question, do you see him having a couple of big games like the old school Tohu Harrison at Melbourne, like having like a couple of 130s, or you just see him being, you know, having a good game and scoring a 90 here and there?
I think he can definitely have the big games. Like, he got the 134 when he scored the double last year, but you know, he didn't actually score early tries. I know it looked like that he did, but he actually had some early line breaks with try assists. And that's the thing, like, it's not just the tries with him going over. He goes through and he's able to make plays. And he's just got he's the whole package to me. So I just think that he's actually, I don't want to compare him to like a David Fifita because they are different players, but like,
oh, very different.
Yeah, but it's sort of like David Fifita could hit on so many super coach scoring categories because he's just such a gun. I think that whilst he does it a bit differently, Katoa can do that as well. And he's still someone that's just, like, last year was his career year, but it was the first time in a while that he's actually gotten an opportunity to just start on an edge. So I do think that he's going to get better, and I do think that he's got real big ones in him. Like, it wouldn't surprise me to see him score a hat-trick in a game this year, and then he's probably looking at 150-plus. So I definitely could see it.
Yeah, he'll end up at Gold Coast in a couple of years as well with the rest of them.
Yeah, possibly. Look, Ryan Pappenhausen, fallen gun. Everybody wants him to not get injured this year because he's had a horrid run. From 2020 onwards, he's played 17, 13, 12 and two games. It looks very bad for him. Very popular because he's coming in at a discount. So he only averaged 48 minutes a game last year, 45 points per game, but it was only across two games. They priced him at 645,000. That's around a 63-point average that they've priced him at. And there's a lot of value there if you think he's going to be what he was before last year. So before last year, he went 90 points per game in 2022, 79 in 21, and 71 points per game in 2020. All those were obviously injury-affected seasons as well, though. It's a real hard one for me to gauge because I sort of said to myself when he had that injury, I think it's going to take him a while to come back from that, and we may not even see the old Pap again. It might just be too many injuries for him, and particularly with a shattered kneecap, like, it's pretty serious. So even though he's quite cheap, I've never considered him for this year, but certainly a lot of super coaches have, and I understand why. Can't take anything out of last year's numbers, but when you look at the numbers before that, you know, he's averaging 83 points per game across three seasons before last year when he was playing at least a dozen games a season. He's obviously a huge gun. To me, I just think that it was a safer bet. We've got so many fullbacks to choose from. I'd rather choose four or five other guys instead that don't have the risk. But he does have the price factor, though, doesn't he? He's very cheap.
Oh, yeah. Exactly the same thought process. Obviously concerned about the knee myself, but then I remembered the last few games of last year. Like, he was running around fine. It obviously wasn't the same old Pat, but he still looked dangerous, and the injury had nothing to do with his knee to finish off the year last year. So as long as the ankle and the rest of the body are fine, I'm not too concerned about the knee. That's the reason why I sort of had him in the team early, but it just came down. The reason why I didn't choose him in the end, it had nothing to do with concerned about him. It was just more Ponga was the number one guy this year, with just churning out ton after ton with ease, so, and his draw. So he was 100% lock. So basically I only left one other position, and without the center three quarter jewels anymore, you've got to choose your flavor of choice, and Trbojevic, you know, just for a little bit more, was just the cherry on the cake for me.
Yeah, and I think that's more than a fair call. And if you look back at the 2022 season, you know, Pappenhausen had 52 points a game between his tries, his line breaks, his assists, and his goal kicking.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of attacking points, but he was obviously a great attacking player. You look at the fact that he's had two games played last year and the Storms' initial draw with some hard games, and you sort of think, well, if he's a guy that's relying so much on his attack and they've got tough matchups, like particularly the Penrith one, then maybe he's not going to start off too well, especially with the, you know, the long layoffs and all that. And that's that was a concern for me as well. So I don't love the player going for him, but he's the type of X-factor talent where it wouldn't surprise me either if he just comes out and just blitzes it straight away. I just like the other options better.
Quick one before we move on. Just to give the listeners an idea, if he's not kicking, what would his average be based on the peak year from the prior, so not last year, but the year prior when he was absolutely in form? What was his average? What was his points per game in goal kicking? And so if you take that off, just to give everyone an indication as to what he may produce if he's at peak fitness and not kicking.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, Billy, because I've got that number right here. So in 2022, when he averaged 90 points a game, he had almost 14 points a game in goal kicks, 164 total points for the season. Did have a minus 22. So, I mean, if you want to take that into account, you got around a dozen points a game that you can probably safely put onto him just from goal kicking. Now, obviously, if he loses that, that's an even bigger concern. Like, if Meany gets the tee out, you know, you're already 12 points behind on what he would normally do.
Okay, cool. So, just for perspective, you need to be 100% healthy and
goal kicking. Yeah, I think that he loses a lot of the cachet if he's not goal kicking.
Yeah.
Look, we do have a couple of guys named that are definitely one that's worth talking about because he's been very popular. A lot of people are throwing Joe Chan in their side. Chan has got the edge role, and it's going to be interesting because we've got Katoa on one side next to Hughes, and then we're going to have Chan on the other next to Munster. And I do think that Pappenhausen does sweep really well to the left, which is going to be Chan's side as well. I don't know if that's going to impact him at all or not, but Chan really doesn't have any data and he's pretty close to a bottom dollar guy. He was always in the running to win that. I think a lot of people thought that Bradley was going to get named today, but it didn't happen. Chan's only played one game, and it was for 21 points, so we can't really take anything out of that. But the fact that he has been named on an edge and he's only 238,000, it starts to become a bit hard to ignore. We do have Nelson Asafa Solomona not in the side, and we do have Bloor in the extended bench. Now, it did seem like Bloor was going to come in and get that edge role, and people were interested in him, even though he's a lot more than Chan, and certainly Bradley as well. You'd have to think that with Chan named, though, he's won it on merit over Bradley. And Bloor as well, they were talking about potentially, I'm pretty sure they were talking about playing him maybe in the middle as well. So, you know, at that sort of price for Chan, even if he only got 60 minutes, not 80, and he could get 80, it's going to be great. It's just a matter of how long he actually keeps that job. But he has been coming through for a little while, and it does seem that Bellamy really rates him.
Yeah, and even when Nass does come back, I can't see him moving to the edge. I know he's had a couple of games there in the past, but that was kind of right side, not left. I prefer the big fella in the middle. I reckon it's his spot to lose. I reckon he gets a bit of game time. Yeah, surely it'll be 80 minutes. They're not going to rotate. Bellier doesn't rotate edges. They all play 80. Kikuchi always played right. Bromwich played left. I don't think, I know he's going to be on the same side as Munster, but I don't think Munster's that type of guy that gives the short balls to those edges. He's more of a tackle buster, throw it out the, not Cody Walker type, sweep out the back. I think he's more of a short balls to the center and left wing Munster. I think if anything, he sort of grubbers it behind the line for the second row. So I can't see Munster adding too much value to him on the left hand side in regards to line breaks, but certainly have that kind of talent around is going to give you a few more opportunities. So he's basically just a guy that you get put on the bench and don't ever kind of start unless you're up against the Dragons or something, I would think.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to throw him in just because I need a guy that's cheap. And as we know with this TLT, we don't have many of them. But I will say I think that it's good that Liero isn't dropped and he's actually named at 13 because I thought that he was a bit average at times on the edge and Bellamy's decided that he's going to have him as a middle and that's where he was training in the offseason. To me, that gives good job stability because it's not like if Naz comes back and they want to start him at 13 or start him at prop and move Josh King back to 13 or something like that, I don't think they're going to move Liero back to an edge. Because they've already decided he's a middle.
No.
So to me, it's Chan and Bradley were neck and neck for the job and Chan won it. And I would think that Chan would have to have a few bad games to lose it. Like we talked about Liera last year. He was okay, but he wasn't spectacular. And Bellamy gave him a lot of opportunity to sort of grow into that edge role and everything else. So I'm reasonably comfortable putting Chan into my side. I don't think that there was too many other big options to talk about and what was actually named. Don't need to take a quick break again, this time to talk about oneworldcourier.com.au. If you have a business yourself and you do a lot of shipping, you need to check One World Courier out because they are phenomenal. They are a platform that can offer you the best rates across several different providers. So even if you just work for a business and you do any shipping or couriering, you can have a look at oneworldcourier.com.au today. And if you sign up and where there's a spot that says, "Where did you hear about us?" go other, and there's a space there, put All Stars, and they'll know that you've come from this podcast, and I guarantee you they'll give you some of the best rates to start off with as well and some good deals. So make sure you do that if you want some good deals early. But they always often have best rates because their platform, like I said, compares the market and they'll give you the best rates possible. And certainly you can choose from some of the best providers available as well. So oneworldcourier.com.au, go get on them today. They're a great Australian-owned company and they will provide you with the best service as well as the rates. Continuing on with the footy. So I do want to move on. Let's talk about TLT and the teams. We're not going to do a market watch because I think that, I mean, we've had the two games and obviously people can be swapping their teams around a lot and doing things. What I probably would suggest though, Billy, before we go into TLT is that there's a couple of strategy points that I guess, especially for new super coaches, it's always key to mention. And some of the experienced guys will say, "Oh, look, that's obvious and stuff." Yeah, but maybe for some of the newer coaches, it's not. I don't think that people should be panicking at this point. It's probably the worst thing that you can do when you have a couple of games in and you've got unlimited trades and you just tear your whole team apart. Like, you got to remember that the guys that have played have given you bad scores if you're in that position, not the other guys in your team that haven't played yet that you're going to rip apart. So you've really got to be mindful, I think, of making too many changes and jumping off guys that you were, you know, looking at for months and sold on and jump off them just because you've started badly. You know, that's a common mistake that can happen at this point.
Yeah, 100%. Just back yourself. All you got to do is say to yourself, if I don't get this player and they score well, am I going to kick myself on Monday next week? That's the only thing you've got to ask yourself. Just go with your gut. If it doesn't come off, fine, unless you can say, "Oh, I had a crack at it for a reason and I can trade the luck out in a week or two if needed." But give them a couple of weeks. That's the other thing too. Don't trade someone out after 1 week. Everyone can fluctuate. Any idiot can score, you know, 160 points on 1 week and go back to score 10 the next. So give it a couple of weeks, then look at the break evens. And yeah, I think it's obvious, pretty obvious from there.
Yeah, and really important not to panic trade, like Billy said, because, you know, you can't account for injuries. That's going to happen. It's going to happen to everyone during the year. And probably the other thing I'd say to everyone too is that, you know, I said, you know, don't rip your team apart, but if there is significant changes to TLT on some of your players that are going to be adverse for them, don't be too bedded with a player to not move them out and stubborn about it just because you had them the whole preseason. Look, I've had hands the whole preseason. I'm not going to leave him there. You know, I don't want a job share hooker. You know, so TLT has changed my view on that. You know, people might leave a Bradley or a McKaylee and stuff there just because, you know, they were sort of sold on them and they think they're going to play. They're not playing. They haven't been named. There's other options there to look at, you know. So I think that's the other important thing. It's almost the polar opposite of the guys that are ripping their teams apart. Don't be too scared to make changes because you've got unlimited ones and now's the time to fix it. And if guys' value has actually gone down based on TLT or other options that are better have presented themselves, look, nobody knows, all right? Nobody's seen your team properly yet. There's no harm in saying, "Look, I got it wrong," or "The coaches did something different. I'm going to change it up a bit as well."
Yeah, exactly. One thing I do disagree on, though, is not having blokes like McKaylee or Wilson. So if you've got a team completely put together and you really need a bloke at that kind of price point, it's okay to have one enough, maybe two, if you really think they're going to come into the team pretty soon. So Wilson, as an example, I reckon sort of Marty was just thrown in for a bit of aggression. The kid played end of last year. He's got a PPM 1.5, 1.6. at that kind of price point, those are people that you're not actually going to play ever. So it's perfectly fine to have people like that on your bench for 2 or 3 weeks before they even start. I'm a big advocate of that, particularly if it means getting a much stronger starting team and being able to sort of get up the ranks early.
I can get around it for one, but I just think that you can't do it. I personally don't reckon that it's good to have multiples, and particularly these days because you've got the buys all the time. Every week we've got a different team and a buy. I think that we can get a bit called out.
If you've got good jewels, it makes it easier.
Certainly good jewels makes it easier. Look, one thing I will say is that even though we didn't get, you know, a huge influx of cheapies and certainly no bottom dollar guys that we would normally have in a round one TLT, we did get a number of options pop in. So, I mean, that's the other thing. I would just sort of say, look, do you need to keep a Bradley? Like, you can swap him straight over to a Chan and you've got a guy that's playing and actually won the job, you know? So just look at those. I mean, McKaylee, good point. Maybe there isn't anyone for a McKaylee and maybe you decide, you know what, I'm going to carry just him. And it's probably the last thing that we'll say before we actually look at the players is we have to be really careful this TLT, because one of the things that we don't know is what the rotations will actually be. And you can say we know the team's 1 to 17, but we actually don't, do we? Because they've all got extended squads, and we see it all the time. We're going to see it all year when teams get changed around. Now, in round 6, Billy, we have an idea what a coach is going to do. You know, if a coach names someone on an extended bench that they normally are playing, we know they're going to come into the side. We just don't know what the rotations are for round 1. So we don't know about this. Maybe Blaw comes onto the bench for the Storm from jersey 19. It's entirely possible. So you've got to be also quite careful and mindful of late changes and what can happen round 1-2.
Yeah, exactly. Now, before we go into this TLT, there's one question I want to ask you now. If there was, because there weren't any cheapies, hardly any cheapies named this year, if you had to choose one or someone that wasn't actually playing right now, who do you think would be the most likely to come in week 2, week 3, week 4, so that if you do have to go enough in order to get the right mix of a team, who would that be? So obviously there's Iros and people like that to discuss. And also, obviously the Tigers aren't playing this week. So keep in mind, maybe we'll have a quick sort of chat around who the potential or likely sort of Tiger mid-prices or low, bottom-ranked guys might be. So there's an option for not getting enough, but maybe get someone that potentially named next week that isn't available this week.
Yeah, I'm not too sure on the Tigers whether there's anything there that I'd want to sort of bet on. But I really like the look of Bradley in the preseason, but I just think that with the makeup of that team, I wouldn't be that comfortable with it. I will say probably when I look at like the Cowboys side, for instance, like I look at that side and go, you know what, Jordan McLean has been really disappointing for them and he's starting at 8. And then you've also got on the bench, you know, Sam McIntyre, who's been, you know, solid, but is he better than McKaylee? I don't know about that. And when you've got a Fenufuaikai who can play on an edge as well as middle, and Griffin Neem who can play on an edge as well as middle, you kind of think, geez, they probably are missing like a real big bopper, proper front row forward like McKaylee. So I would probably, if I had to pick one, say McKaylee. I think that he's probably got the best chance. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he actually came into the 17, you know, late, an hour before kickoff. I think that that could happen. But obviously we don't know, and it's actually the last game of the round too.
Yep, true.
TLT time. Let's go for it. So first game on Thursday night. And geez, it's good to have Thursday night footy back. Newcastle versus the Raiders.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I think there wasn't a huge amount of surprises for the Newcastle Knights. Jaden Bradley's dead as a hooker option. People are saying, oh, maybe I can put him in there as a placeholder. I don't think he can. But the big one for me was Kai Pierce-Paul was actually named on the bench, and I was really, really keen on Dylan Lucas. So you would think that they're probably going to job share, but I was also really encouraged by the fact that Jack Cocker was on the bench. So Cogger, two front rowers in Saifidi and Hetherington, and Pierce-Paul. It hasn't put me off Lucas too much because I do think that Pierce-Paul has the opportunity to play at lock, because even like Leo Thompson and Jacob Saifidi starting, they're not big front row minute players. So I kind of worked my way around, you know, maybe Pierce-Paul plays 15 minutes on the edge and 15 minutes a lock. I could see that, and particularly low minutes because of his foot injuries and disrupted preseason. And then all of a sudden at 65 minutes, I can certainly get around to Dylan Lucas still at 500K in the centre wing. So that was probably one of the biggest ones that I was watching for the Newcastle Knights. And I'm actually starting to come around and maybe looking at Dylan Lucas again after trading him out of my side pre-season.
I really struggle with those edges. I would absolutely love to have an edge back row available at centre or three quarter like the old days, but I just don't see him. Even if he was getting sort of 80 minutes, I'm not sure I could get him at that price into my team at 7.75. So the fact that you're willing at maybe 65 minutes, certainly differing opinions there. I don't see really sort of big minutes in their pack. So the money for me is obviously in that kind of back line, which we will get to in a minute. So maybe if you end up having an 80-minute edgy, I could be interested. But it would really depend on his first couple of games. So for me, he's really a good close watch, and I really want to see that minute rotation, because the last few years with Newcastle, it was extremely frustrating having blokes like sort of Watson and not knowing what their role is going to be. Always someone coming in for 8 or coming in for someone always coming in for 13 or for 9 and rotating. And the fact that Bradley's not there now, you don't even know who's going to go into hooker for 20-minute spells. So that's really unknown.
Yeah, it is unknown. We are taking a lot of punts in round one. I'll say, like, I'm happy to admit that I'm a Dylan Lucas believer. I just really like his game. So I'm willing to take a bit of a gamble on him potentially. And I also think that this matchup against the Raiders, Newcastle at home, where the full-strength side, the Raiders team does not look very good on paper. I like the Knights for a bit of a smash-up and hitting those edges as well.
How do you think Canberra are going to look without the big horse on the right and the six on the left?
Well, they don't have... Yeah, I mean, Horsburgh and Whiten are two massive losses for them that they don't have playing. And even Chris is a loss because, you know, they've got Albert Hoppawattie in the centres. They've got Nick Kotrick on one wing and Savage on the other. It's not great. You know, and you got Josh Papali'i starting when normally I think that he was better coming off the bench last year. So they just look really weak to me, the Raiders, and especially travelling away from GIO. I like the Knights to put on points here. I mean, we may as well mention it now with the Knights team. Like, I've got VC Ponga all over. And I'd be happy to go see.
Oh, mate, I have since day one. Yep, I've had since day one. I have since day one.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that I've got Greg Marju in this side is because I was, you know, really happy looking at this Raiders matchup and seeing that they were under strength. They've got Whitehead out as well, by the way. So, I mean, he's out 5 weeks. So this just spells like a Newcastle Knights carve-up, and I would be very worried if I wasn't a Caelan Ponga owner and you see this team named, I would be putting Caelan Ponga in my site because I really think he's a great VC or C option this week. And some of these other Knights that people aren't looking at, like a Greg Marju, could really turn up as well.
Oh, mate, I was talking to someone this afternoon. And I said, look, he said, rate my team. I said, look, I really like the fact that you've gone left field and right field and centre field, and there's a whole, everything in here is completely different to what other teams do. But you get down to the bottom and say, mate, you don't have Caelan Ponga. For the love of God, if there's one thing that's going to destroy your season this year, it is curling up in the fetal ball every time he plays for the next 6 weeks.
Oh, it's not good to watch. And he's going to be goal-kicking, obviously. The Raiders team, we should mention a couple of interesting factors. Ethan Strange won the sixth jersey. I think you pretty much have to get him in. He's basically a must-have because of the lack of cheapies. At 238K, you just get him in. Like, surely you've got him in your side.
Oh, yeah, he actually looked decent too from the spot checks that I saw as well.
The other cheapie that's actually gotten a job in the starting side is Denny Levi, and I really dislike Denny Levi as a player and an option for Supercoach. I don't think he's very good, but this is a spot we find ourselves in. He is not the bench player. He's a starter. So maybe he's going to play 45, 50 minutes, and he's only priced at 31 minutes and 26 points a game. 238,900. He's close to bottom dollar as a second hooker, and he's starting. He obviously has Starling on the bench, but I mean, one of the things that I've gotten around a little bit, even though I don't like Levi and I don't think he's a good point scorer, and it could be slow burn and problematic, a lot of red flags, but he's like 100K cheaper almost than, was 100K cheaper than Hant, and he's like 75, 80K cheaper than what Lussick is. So I just feel like, well, look, if you're going to go into a job share situation with hookers that aren't very good, maybe he just picked the cheapest one at $238,000. So it's very little investment, Billy, for your second hooker. So I'd be lying if I said that when I saw it, I haven't considered it.
Particularly when, even if they're only playing 50 minutes, you know they're going to be playing in a middle tackle, making sort of 30, 35 tackles. They're probably not going to miss many, not much, three or four runs. They've only got to be on the field for, what, 55, 60 minutes to get a guaranteed 40, 45 points. And in the scheme of things, that might not be anywhere near sort of Harry Grant, but it's only 25 points off. And if for the money that you save, the amount, the type of quality player that you would actually get in the halves or the second row or at fullback, it's going to be more than 25 points that you're making up. So it's not the worst strategy in the world. I mean, the only thing I can say here is what happened in the good old days of, you know, Cam Smith and then choosing between sort of Isaac Luke and Luke or Cookie, mate. It's dead set dire straits up there now, isn't it?
No, oh, it's bloody awful. And that's why, like, I think if you decide, look, I just don't want to spend in the second spot, I don't care who it is, then I do think that Levi's your man, because you've already resigned yourself to having a bad player there.
Yeah.
And he's the cheapest one, right? He's the cheapest starter you can have. He had two games last year where he started at the beginning of the season and he played 40 and 55 minutes and he scored 30 and 56 points. So, I mean, you know, basically average 47 minutes and average about the same in points across that first couple of games. And then he actually got injured the first game.
And they've got the draw too. So there's no reason why you can't put a line break in there or get over the line. And you only need maybe one or two of those over a five-game span to get an extra, 15 points a game or something or other?
Yeah, and if you get lucky with a guy that's almost basement dollar, it skyrockets you. And that's what summer supercoach is, just luck, okay? And it is, you know? And you could get lucky because Denny Levi could score a try straight up. And at his price, that's going to be great. Now, if you get lucky with someone at a hooker at 350K, it's not as good because they're already so far ahead in price point on them. They're not going to make as much money as fast. So I do think that it's an option. It's an interesting change for the Raiders to start with. And you do know as well, I think there is job security just because Starling's always on the bench and he's always going to be. Like, Ricky's made it very clear he's not going to start Tom Starling. That's been his role for several years now, and he's just gave up on trying to start him, so it's not going to happen. The other winners for the Raiders, we've got Zach Hosking starting on an edge because it's come out that the Whitehead's out 4 or 5 weeks. Hosking might have been interesting, but I think at his price point and for that time frame, he's not. But one of the things that I was quite happy with was Morgan Smithies. I wasn't very into in the preseason because Horsey's back round three. But I do think Smithies has played on an edge overseas before. I do think that if he's preferred over Hoskins, he may very well move. Or certainly, you know, we have seen Horse play on an edge before as well. Or we've seen Papali'i not be a starter last year and be off the bench, and Horse could be at the front row. I see a lot of different avenues for Morgan Smithies to end up earning a role if he can play well enough at the start. So his stock is well up, I think, because of the team that they've named and the injuries that they've got.
Yeah, I think Horse will end up going to the edge because they've got two really good options in Tarpany and the big fella coming back. So that's some big bodies in the middle. If you're going to move anyone, I'd probably move Hosking out. The only caveat there with Hosking is he looked pretty dangerous last year from time to time, and I think pretty sure it was the right side that was spelled a fair bit. So if you go and look at his numbers, I'm pretty sure he would have played a lot of 60, 65-minute games. And the Panthers always go left as well. When Cleary goes right, it's more of a kick behind that line. You don't get a lot of short ball there. So maybe Strange can do something a bit more with him, but five games, it's not a lot of runway. That's the concern at that price.
Mm. Well, I do think the Raiders are going to struggle, but they do have a couple of pretty interesting super coach options there. Let's move along. The Warriors versus Sharks. I think this one was one of the easiest ones as far as the Warriors team. It's basically been named pretty much as we thought that it would be. I didn't see any particular surprises. I don't think anyone's stock really went up or down. It's kind of stayed the same. For the Sharkies, it's funny because the front row forward just looks like a big mishmash now that Braden Hemley-Ueli is out. We've got Oregon Kafusi and Royce Hunt starting. That's something that we didn't know was going to happen a couple of weeks ago. Dale Finucane's off the bench, and Toby Rudolph is also off the bench, along with Thomas Hazelton. So they've got three big middle front row forwards on there, along with Jack Williams, who's really a middle as well. There was talk that Cam McInnes might move to hooker during the game. Maybe that makes him more of an attractive option, I'm not sure. But the forward pack just looks super heavy, Billy, for the Sharks, and that was probably a bit surprising to me. They've got a lot of big boppers there. And we did say that guys like Royce Hunt, if they were starting or there was an injury, because he's only priced at low 30s, you know, maybe he gets an extra 10 points a game and there's some value there. It's just so hard, though, because there's so many forwards named. It's an interesting bench.
Yeah, I think SG does a bit with this game. Because it's over in New Zealand, isn't it? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep.
Yeah, it's over in New Zealand. So Warriors home game start the season. Nothing against Cronulla, but those are big forwards, but they're not really hard-hitting, offloading, sort of dangerous type forwards. They're more like sort of old-school Aiden Tolman, just big guys up. Sort of up the middle. I don't think they're going to be as agile as mobile. So I think over there, if SJ can get a bit of a dry track, I think he sort of creates a little more space than usual, more up the middle a little bit more, as opposed to going wide. So I think, obviously, I've got the C on, it really concerns me this. I've got the VC on Ponga, but I've got the C on Hindsey, which is a bit concerning over in New Zealand. But, not really sure who else to put on at the moment.
But you could go Ponga straight up. But look, I'm the same as you actually, and we haven't spoken about this. So it's not like we've influenced each other. But I've had the VC and on Ponga and the C on Nico the whole time. And I mean, last year he went 72 and 102 against the Warriors. But the year before he actually had a massive game, which I mentioned previously, where he scored 185, and that's his highest he's ever scored against anyone. So I don't think he's going to give you a bad game, even if the Sharks lose. I actually tipped the Sharks until I saw the team, and now I'm really not sure because I am worried, and there might be some opportunity for some of the more mobile players on the edges for the Warriors to actually break through, even some runs up the middle and stuff. If they run some plays at these big forwards, they could get somewhere there. But it does shape up as a really good game. This is probably one of the hardest games for me to predict. I didn't know what quite to make of it, but I did know that I was going to keep the C on Hines myself.
Mate, I normally don't look forward to the Warriors games as much as other teams, but really excited to see how the Shecky comes back. I really want to see him sort of step back into his old mold and see what he can do. I know he's at centre. I know it's a different team, but he does play on the same side as SJ.
Yeah, I'm interested to see that too. It's going to be a good return to see 100%. Him back in rugby league. Storm play the Panthers. I think the Storm, obviously the big surprise was Joe Chan. We're not going to go into this one just because we already did. I don't think there's any C options for the Storm side. For the Panthers, it's good that Taruva is actually not injured. I will say with Cleary, it would be pretty ballsy, I think, for people to captain him in this. They're playing over at Amy Park against the Storm round one when Storm's healthy. And they're also playing, like, obviously after they've been in England and had the World Club Challenge and stuff, and they just tend to start slow as well. Well, I'd be very worried about captaining a Nathan Cleary, who I guess in a lot of weeks teams would look at as captaining.
Yeah, Hines for me. Originally, I did have him to see purely because I thought if he has a bad game, he's still going to score 65, kind of 70. Like 20, 30 points a half for Cleary. Do you really see him not doing that versus the Storm? Is a straight-up question?
Oh, look, yeah, probably. He did throw on 103 points at home against them last year in the only game that they played. So, you know, he had that, but he's also only got a 61 average against Melbourne, and that's in the bottom few teams as far as his averages. I think it's the third worst out of anyone. He's only scored one ton for 103 against them too, which is his worst as far as high scores aside from against the Dragons, funnily enough. So the numbers don't actually support him too much. He may not score badly, but I do think it's a round where we might get some really big scores, and that's probably going to hurt you because, like, 70 is not bad, but if Ponga goes 120 and Hines goes 100, you're pretty far behind quickly.
Well, I certainly hope he doesn't score 120 because I dropped in for Moses. I'm going with the eel, mate. The ear of the eel.
Oh, that's the way, mate. Go with your heart. I did really like Isaac Tango, and I'm not going to talk about him again because we obviously had the big chat about him in the Penrith preseason podcast. But last year he threw 118 points against the Storm, and that was, I'm pretty sure, away, and he scored a double and he absolutely carved them up. And they did seem pretty susceptible outside backs last year. They've had some changes. It's the start of a season, so maybe they're not as susceptible. But I'm certainly keeping an eye on Tango, and I think they will go his side quite a bit because of how he's played against the Storm in the past. So that's just a bit of a smoky. Maybe on Picklebet, have a look, because I reckon he's around $2.80 for an any time. Moving along, the next game might have some more options for us, the Parramatta Eels and the Bulldogs. This is at Combank Stadium. I have Dylan Brown and Mitchell Moses in this, Billy. I am excited as anything to see them go at it against the Bulldogs. I think, obviously, the hooking was the big news for this one with Lussick starting. You can't possibly have Brendan Hands in your side. But with Brad Arthur naming a side that's got a hooker on the bench, I think that we're all a bit relieved. Like, as far as Sean Lane goes, as far as Hopgood goes, even as far as Ryan Madison, if you went for a pod option and went him because you know his minutes off the bench are normally pretty good, having Hands there and the shared hooker duties means there's only three forwards on the bench, and that's good for all the Eels forwards.
Yeah, it is. Although the thing that really concerned me is that there's two edges on there. So, like, Tuilagi is a pure edge. He's not a middle guy. So where does he come in the game, and who does he take minutes off? So, you know, like, that's the thing that concerns me, because I've got absolutely no doubt that a lock moves up into the front row rotation. So there's kind of three. But you got to look at those two edges on the bench and go, where do they come in? Because Lane's historically been an 80-minute edge. The right edge sometimes, you know, spells kind of for 20 minutes, but that was only so that the Hopgood could rotate into the right. But now that Hopgood likely rotate into the forwards, why we have two edges? I just can't figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know whether he's going to try and move Lane into front row, which we've seen happen before. You could have Hopgood and Lane both move in the front row. You could have Madison just come on just as a pure middle as well. So I think those are the probable scenarios. I don't think anyone's going to lose out in minutes too much, though. So I think that's the best thing with having those two hookers there. With the Bulldogs, they've ended up with Jacob Kras starting. There was some concern with his back, but he's ended up starting at centre. Just that move, first of all, I'm not sure if I like him at centre as much. I think that I like him on the wing more. I feel like that his runs are going to be much higher on the wing, and that means that his tackle breaks and his offloads are going to be better as well, which is what he excelled at last year.
Yeah, that's why. It's not why I pulled him out. I pulled him out because of the injury concern. He's not 100% right. He's missed preseason. How do I know he's not going to come out again or get a rest? And I kind of look, 600K moving to the centre, that was the nail in the coffin, mate. I want him for exactly what you said, those kick returns and tackle busts, and also 100% healthy. So left him right out now. I can't do it, although it pains me because he's one of those undervalued guys we really talked about earlier in the podcast.
So another guy that ended up being value that we got named as a starter was at 238,900. Farmer Suili has been named as the starting front rower. Now, I didn't think that was going to happen. Now that it has, I do think that, even though I said, look, McKaylee's probably my pick of the guys that might come into the side and might be relevant quicker, I just think that it's a really easy switch from McKaylee to Farmer Suili and just take him because he's a starting front rower. And I think that it's pretty good when you look at the fact that you got Jamin Salmon and Kurt Mann probably sharing a role. Sam Hughes, I know there's big raps on him off the bench, but you know he's not going to come in with very little experience and play massive minutes. Josh Curran might, and then Curtis Myron has always been a small minute forward. So, you know, really, Farmer Suili in 238K price point, he doesn't have to do much. He's only priced on 29 minutes a game. As a starter, you'd think that he's going to get 35 to 40 at a minimum. And when you look at the pack, you just sort of go, well, he shouldn't do that easy. There's not a huge amount of competition there. So, I mean, at that price point, I've actually just put him in my side for McKaylee, and I just think that's an easy swap. Now, is he going to score well, Billy? Probably not. But you've got Ryan Sutton out to around 5 or 6, and some of these other boys that they've named aren't necessarily going to take the jersey off him either. So he's in mine. I'm not hugely confident about it, but as far as cheapies go, he's almost down there at the bottom.
What's the price difference between him and McKaylee?
They're exactly the same price. They're both $238,900.
So basically, you could just chuck him in, and then just rotate it. Whichever one of those dogs ends up starting, he just rotate them. So if the young kid ends up being an absolute beast and getting more minutes, you put him in. So it's basically a free throw at stumps for about 5 or 6 weeks anyway, so probably a never runner.
Yeah, I think that really solved a few problems for coaches at front row forward that had McHaley, who wasn't named. The interesting question is going to be, you know, Josh Curran is on the bench and Salmon is starting. I'm not sure whether I want either of them. Salmon starting, he might only get 40 minutes, yeah. And I'm just really torn if that's going to be worth anything, even at centre wing. He's already priced at 35 a game, although it was in a different role. Maybe he's got 7 or 8 points of value, but he's not score very well if he's only going to get 40 minutes. And Curran, what's his role going to be? It's really hard to tell. And I don't like getting, even if I think someone like Curran's going to come on and play 55 minutes, and that's going to present some value and good points, I just can't do it at that price when someone's on the bench and pay 420 for him.
Yeah, I have, purely because I really rate him. I think he's a not a Cam Murray clone, but Cam Murray type capability. So the same sort of size, ball playing kind of lock. He's got a decent motor. He can play edge. He can play middle. I just think he's going to come off the bench and play the 55 minutes. Or at least in decent. Anyway, I know Percy has him as a lay. I don't know why. I can't see how he should be on the bench over Salmon. I just think he's going to be more of an impact player and come on not too late. And Salmon probably plays that sort of 25-minute role, comes off. So
the problem is that Kurt Mann's there though. So I mean, Kurt Mann has to play 13, so he has to share with Salmon.
So you think Curran was what, straight into the forwards?
Well, he'll have to either go on an edge or go and play at front row. And I tend to think that he's probably going to play at front row because Kikau and Preston, I mean, Preston's guaranteed 80 minutes. He's not coming off. Maybe Kikau plays 65?
Kikau's not going to play 80. Kikau will play sort of 60, 65. He's not playing 80 at all. So that would be where some of your minutes come.
Yeah, I mean, at 420K, he's going to need a few. And I mean, the last 2 years, Kikau played 73 and 76 minutes a game. So,
okay. Sorry, Perso. I think I see where you're coming from now. I do playing ability, but I was thinking he was going to get some decent minutes off the bench. But what do you do with Salmon?
I mean, look, I think that he might. I just think that it's too hard for me to take that risk sight unseen without knowing how they're going to use this rotation.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that he's a good player. The problem is that if they're going to name Salmon and Kurt Mann in their 17, those guys have to share the 13 jersey. Like, there's nothing else that can happen with those guys. They have to. So that cancelling out the 13 jumper just really reduces Curran's minutes possibility with where he can go and where he can get his minutes from.
I don't know who to trade him to.
Well, you got 420K to play with, so there's a few options. I think those were the main... The main interesting talking points from TLT for both the Eels and the Bulldogs. The Eels did move Bailey Simonson to the wing, which I thought they might have been tempted to leave him at centre, but they haven't. Billy, if you were feeling a little bit tempted to start off on a flyer, do you see your Eels carving up a little bit here? Because when you're going back to last year, like if you look at Clint Gutherson versus the Bulldogs, he went 75 and 138. If you wanted to go for a Mitchell Moses hand grenade captaincy, he didn't go as well at 65 and 89, but he has scored 114 versus Dogs before. And then some people are really fired up about Dylan Brown, and I tell you what, he'll be like 1% captained.
Oh, I could never captain Dylan Brown. I just don't. His game just isn't SC-friendly from an attack point of view. Like, he's just got 40 points in kind of tackles and a couple of really good breaks. I don't think he's going to bust you open. Moses has some interest, although I would only really do him when he's there, like bottom two, bottom three ranked team like St. George, when they're really sort of halfway through the season and they've almost lost the plot. I couldn't do it any other time. And Gutho, I think he just needs to have a home draw. Doesn't need I wouldn't captain him versus the top two or top three teams, although it would really have to be a home ground for me to sort of see him.
Yeah, well, they're going to be at Combank Stadium, which they love playing at, so it could be a really good game for the Eels. The Bulldogs, you know, a lot of new players in this side.
They're a lot stronger.
Yeah, they are. A lot of guys to prove a point, and they're 100% healthy too.
It is an old rivalry as well. The Dogs are going to come out hard, mate. I wouldn't want to cap anyone in this game at all.
Yeah, I could see it being high scoring still. Like, I could see the 32-28 type of scoreline, which really helps out on the Supercoach scoring. Before we move on, I'm interested to watch Pennacini as a pod. I really like the look of him in the preseason. I think he's young enough to improve a lot, and he showed real glimpses last year. So he's one that I've got my eye on for this one. The second last game of the round is the Titans and the Dragons. I don't have much of a read on the Titans because, I mean, they've got a hooking sharing role with Randall and Virals. They've got guys out, so you've got Haas starting in second row for Fifita, but that's not going to be for long enough. And then on the bench, you got a really weird bench where you got Aaron Clark, who normally helped out at hooker, but he's on the bench with Sam Verrills and Jamin Dolliff and Isaac Liu. So it's really hard to make much of this. They've obviously got Campbell out as well with Kinney. I'm just actually steering clear of Gold Coast Titans. They've got too many guys coming back into the rotation in the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks and too many guys who we just don't know how they're going to rotate. Like, I could see like a Joe Stimson from 18 jumper coming in. There was talk that Harley Smith Shields would come in. He's in jumper 21. I just don't really like the look of the Titans side. And I think the injury is going to hurt them. And I've got no idea how they're going to end up looking when they take the field in the rotations.
Yeah, yeah. And there's not likely to be many big points in them either. So the only one I'm interested in is the left edge with the big fella out. So I'd be quite keen to go there with Firma, because he's not going to play anything less than 80 minutes. I guarantee that. I think he's got an SC-friendly game in regards to sort of tackles. That left side makes it a bit more interesting too. But as far as that middle rotation is concerned, it's an absolute dog's breakfast. Tino is way too early.
Tino actually looks like he might have gained value because they've got Verrills, Liu, Clark and Jolliffe on the bench. If that stays like that, Tino could be playing big minutes there and guaranteed a good game.
I don't think he's got as big a motor as Haas early. I'd have to go back and have a look at the numbers again, but I'd be pretty confident he's not playing anywhere near the minutes he would play in the middle of the season early. I just wouldn't want to back him at that kind of price this early. 100%, but you want to have sort of 7-8 weeks from now, but do you want to pay up for a forward at his price this early? I wouldn't, but it's not the worst move in the world. I wouldn't begrudge anyone doing it, that's for sure.
The Dragons are their opposition, and there's some interesting moves on this one because Tom Eisenhuth is starting in the 11 jumper, and I think some teams could get very trapped, especially some new teams. I'll throw him in there.
Yeah.
And he's going to be immediately replaced next week by Luciano Leilua. He actually got a downgrade, no one saw it, on his punishment. So he's actually going to be back next week, not the week after. So Eisenhuth is a massive trap. He's going to start for 1 week and then be back on the bench. So certainly wouldn't be looking at him.
Yeah.
Jacob Little got named to start, and he was interesting at just over 450K, especially if he was 80 minutes. We do have Connor Malaysian on the bench, and he's going to spell it hooker. He's a specialist hooker for him. So
yeah.
Whether Little gets 65 minutes, I'm not sure. You know, 60-plus minutes, he's probably going to still have some value, but certainly I think he got hurt by the bench. Another popular one was Fifita. So Viliami Fifita actually got on the bench, which I wasn't sure if he would or not. And he's bottom dollar as a dual, right? And he's been popular all year just because people are throwing him in at, you know, the 204,000 as a dual front row forward, second row forward. But he's ended up on the bench. One of the things that I worry about with this is he's probably the guy that makes way when Luciano comes back. Like, you get Eisenhuth go to the Viliami Fifita role, Fifita out, Luciano start on an edge,
yep.
And then you basically have enough that you're starting. And that's probably not for me when you've got other guys like Fomasoali, who's going to be starting for the Dogs for 30K more. So there's a couple of real big traps that are named for the draft.
Yeah, and the other thing is too, at that kind of price and that, so at those, at that, those kind of minutes that he's going to be getting, 15, 20 minutes most, he's not going to really increase that much in price. So it's basically negates the whole point of having him there. And the other part is, if you end up needing to loot, you're always guaranteed to get a score less than, what, 25? So it's probably detrimental having him there, if anything.
Yeah, and look, if you're going to VC Ponga and you want to loop and he's going to get like a 16-point game, it makes it so much harder. So I really don't like those inexperienced, young, non-guaranteed, possible low-minute front rowers on the bench in my Supercoach team. They can be just Supercoach poison, really.
Yeah, agree, mate. I was just going to say, I reckon a better option than him would actually be going that Fainu, big PPM guy from the Tigers. I reckon he gets sort of 16-17 jersey and probably some more minutes than he would get, more minutes than the Dragons 17 would get, and probably some better points anyway, given his PPM is likely to be a much bigger output.
Yeah, well, probably the thing that I like most about this game is the Dragons paying $2.65. I'm actually going to bet on Picklebet, $2.65. That's good odds. I reckon that the Dragons win that one because it is away, but I don't like the Titans team that's been named much at all. The last game was the Dolphins and the Cowboys. The big news that we already knew about was Tessie New getting the jumper to start at centre instead of Averillo in the 3 jersey. That was quite interesting. But we have seen Ray Stone named at 13, and that's made him an option. Plath was named on the bench, which cancels him out. But Ray Stone comes in as another mid-range second row forward option now, but he's also a second hooker you can have. So at 421,000, I think that some smart teams might go, you know what, I could throw him in at hooker. And as a second hooker, if he's playing big minutes in the 13 jumper, that might be useful. He's priced on 49 minutes a game already, though. And I just did the Dolphins team preview a couple of days ago, so I don't want to rehash it. But basically, we sort of said and agreed, you know, if he's already priced around 50 minutes and he was only scoring 41 points a game, and that was across 17 games, it's probably not worth paying 420K for him. Even if he solves the spot as a second hooker, he's not going to score very much. So his stocks went up, but I still don't love him as an option, and I'm not going to be jumping on him.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, mate. I don't have anything to add apart from, simple mathematics just makes sense sometimes. Like even if there was a 20% increase on that, a 20% increase on those minutes and those points, you're not really pushing anything above the line that's going to say, hey, I'm going to make enough coin that's worth the trade out.
Yeah, and the 4 forward bench, like assuming that, you know, Max Plath is going to be a forward with Kenny Bromwich, Nichols and Kerr, that's interesting for forward minutes. It does seem like Marshall King is going to play reasonably big minutes. But you do have a really – this is one of the ones, Billy, that I was talking about earlier. You know, you've got this big extended bench with guys like Jared Wallace, Averillo, Ewan Aitken, and Isaiah Katoa. Like any of those guys can come in, and then all of a sudden you're going to worry a little bit about it, and it's the last game of the round. So not knowing the rotation really does hurt quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly right.
Cowboys, a lot more exciting here. Talking about pod captaincy options, I've got Scotty Drinkwater in my side at the moment, mate. Bit of a Queensland derby at Suncorp.
I wish I could find a way to get him in, mate. He looks so
He really does, and I'm excited. I think that he's my number one Smoky Big Balls pod captaincy option. I think that Ponga's a clear one, but Drinkwater's only owned by 7% of coaches at the moment. So if you see him and he kills the Dolphins, which I think he's decent chance of doing, that's a real big win for the first up round one captaincy choice.
You know what I really love about him? It's if you go back and rewatch the trials, everyone goes and the defensive line adjusts for the cutout ball at the back and the sweep play. And he just floats it over the top of 3-4 blokes straight out to the winger. Not once, twice, just right on the chest. See you later, mate. He just makes it look so easy.
I absolutely love him. I love him in this game. The other big stocks that went up as well was Lukey got named starting edge, which we knew was going to happen. But
yeah,
I mean,
he's brilliant. He looks dangerous.
he might have become my first picked second row forward. I just love him as a pick, and I think that this just affirms it. Like, he doesn't even need 80, but he might get 80. You know, it's just so much upside with him. And he's a guy that can be a genuine try scorer that that might give these edges a bit of trouble too. So I will throw out a smoky pod to you, though. The other edge, Jeremiah Nanai. He's sort of the forgotten man, and he's a guy that can score in bunches. At 583,000, he's actually not that much more than a lot of these other guys that are getting picked up in the mid-range 400s are. Like, if you ended up finding yourself some extra money, priced at 57, and you think you're going to start well because they've got a pretty good starting draw, he's a smoky for this one that I'll be watching.
What's the price difference between him and Curran then? I'm curious. I'm just trying to see if I've got enough.
About 160.
Oh, Curran must be really cheap then.
Yeah, 420 versus 583.
Oh, I thought he was at 483. Okay. Oh, yeah. No.
I wish, if he was 483, he'd be straight in my
spot. So I get my numbers mixed up there. Like, hold on, that's pretty cheap. Most of them are over 600. Yeah, so there's 100K in there.
I mean, Sam McIntyre is a low minute bench forward. I think the thought process is that Neem and Finifuakai are going to all get more minutes, which will probably happen, but I've seen a bit of talk about guys like Neem and stuff. I don't see enough extra minutes to warrant it, but what it does mean is that I really like the guys that are starting, like Lukey, to get his 80. So big game here. I like some of the Cowboys for some good high Supercoach scoring.
Oh, I can't wait to see how Lukey plays. He wasn't on my radar at all. No, somebody else asked me to go and have a look at him. And I had no idea how insane his PPM was. Like, he just dangerous player, small minutes, now getting the starting gig with Luciano sort of going. And I watched the KO mini of that trial game that they had. Mate, he just bashed that line. He went so close numerous times to getting line break tries. So I'd be more than happy to put it in my side first pick as a second row option.
Well, that does conclude the round, the TLT and the podcast for this week. Billy, it was great to have you back on board, mate. Great to have footy back. And we're probably a little bit rusty, but I'm going to get a bit better when my throat clears up because it's a struggle. But we'll be back for regular TLTs as normal and be resuming the talk and footy episodes in the coming weeks when we get some games and stuff to talk about. But Billy, good luck with your team, mate. Hopefully you have a great weekend and the Power Boys get a big win.
Yeah, sounds good, mate. You too. Nice to see your boys kick off the year with a win. So they're looking a lot different to what they did. Actually, I'll tell you what, so very quickly, mate, how good did Teddy look?
Oh, so good. I really was confident that he was going to look really good and have a bounce back year, but there was too many other options that are better. I was really impressed with how he looked.
Times have changed. Teddy looked the best he's ever looked and scored the same as what Turbo and Latrell did, touching the ball half as many times.
Yes, and that's the issue, isn't it? Like, he just doesn't. I touched on it in the Roosters preseason pod. He just doesn't get the try assist that he was getting 2 years ago, and that's the problem, really. But in real life, I'm delighted. I think they look great. But, you know, we'll get an Eels and Roosters match up pretty soon, mate, and we'll be able to go at it. But until then, put your feet up, big fella. Enjoy the footy. And for everyone else, make sure that you subscribe, not just stream and listen, because you get the episode straight away. We are on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, just about everywhere. SoundCloud's another one that we publish from. And follow us on Twitter, NRL_SC_AllStars. Certainly give our partners a follow or jump on there and sign up with them, which is even better. Official betting partner of the All-Stars podcast is Picklebet. You can go on there, create an account, put All-Stars as your affiliate code, and they'll hit you up with some of the best offers in market as far as their odds go. And also, when they know you're one of our listeners, they'll take great care of you. oneworldcourier.com.au. If you've got a business or you work for a business that does some shipping and needs someone, they've got a platform that has the best rates comparison and can get you some great deals and rates on all your shipping needs for your business. So jump on oneworldcourier.com.au, sign up. And again, All Stars is your referral code or where you heard from, and they'll give you some great rates to start off with. Enjoy the footy this week, everyone. Enjoy playing around with your sides for round one. Enjoy watching and putting your feet up. We'll be back to talk about it all again next week.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.